Tonight, I go to London to speak with my good colleague Joseph Sternberg of the Wall Street Journal editorial board about two elections. One, right behind us, the Spanish election. Joe reported the expectations before the vote last Sunday was that the Socialist Party in power these many years would lose, and the center-right party, Populi, the Popular Party, would win. It didn't happen. Neither side won. It was a tie, a stalemate. Neither side commands enough seats of its own, plus coalition partners that are reasonable to command the 176 seats necessary for a majority. So the rules of the game are the government in place will remain. Unable to form a new government, there'll be new elections soon rather than late. However, what I also learned is that the expectations for the far-right party, so-called by the Reuters reporting, were much higher than came in. It appears that people who had previously been on the far-right voted for the center-right party. That did not push them over the finish line. The other election we discuss is the by-elections recently in Britain. These are elections in between the general election. The next one is expected at the end of 94, in which the parties can maneuver for advantage and talking points. In this instance, Labour expected to win all three. It did not. It lost Uxbridge, the seat that was previously held by the former Prime Minister. However, the defeat of Labour was such a disappointment that they're looking for reasons. After all, the Tories have been in very bad shape ever since the departure of Mr. Johnson, the unhappiness about the choice of the next Prime Minister, and the faltering economy. And nonetheless, Labour did not win. Why? The explanation is very particular. It has to do with ULEZ, ultra-low emission zone. These signs that are put up in London, and that if you have a car that creates too much emissions, you're going to pay a tab each day you drive that car in an ULEZ, U-L-E-Z. In other words, Labour's asking itself, are we too green to win? Also tonight, a conversation with Liz Peake about the expectation of the Federal Reserve meeting in these next hours. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates for the 11th time since the spring of 2002, and then talk of how more could be ahead, depending on the data. The data they're looking at is the jobs market. Is the jobs market growing stronger or weaker? The idea here is to engineer a mild recession. So far, the economy continues to grow, albeit intermittently. There are cooling numbers in jobs, but the inflation is also cooling, a positive direction for the Federal Reserve, the so-called soft landing. Much discussion tonight with Mary Kissel and other colleagues about the sudden departure, absence, purge, disappearance of the former foreign minister, Qin Gang, who now is being erased from the websites of the People's Republic of China. He's replaced by the man who previously held that post, Wang Yi, who is now elevated to the role of chief diplomat. He's the party's diplomat. He's the party's minister of foreign affairs, much more powerful than the government's minister of foreign affairs, Qin Gang. But Qin Gang was a young man, protege of Xi Jinping, the president for life. And his sudden disappearance raises the usual questions about what's going on inside the closed ranks of the senior leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. At the same time, there was a replacement of the central banker for a younger man. Does this indicate Xi Jinping is strong? Likely not. Weak? Who knows? Also tonight, a conversation with my friend Gregory Copley about the prospect of a Xi Jinping attack on Taiwan in these next years. Gregory has a complicated answer having to do with strength and weaknesses. And Richard Epstein tonight, looking forward to the Supreme Court deciding to correct the so-called Chevron doctrine of many years standing that has to do with who is in charge of legislation passed by the U.S. Congress. Is it Congress or is it the administrative office in the executive branch that can be both prosecutor and judge of whether or not you're you're complying with the regulations. This is a bugaboo for many corporations because the administrative judges tend to be harsh and absolute, and you have no appeal. There's no easy access to a judge. The idea here is to get Congress not to over-delegate to the administrative offices and the administrative offices not to overreach. Richard believes that the court will decide against the Chevron doctrine in the new term. We also discussed tonight a fascinating risk to everyone, which is the famine weapon out of the Black Sea. I speak with Antonio Calabashanu of the Geopolitical Future. She's in Bucharest. And right now, there appears to be a threat by the Russian Black Sea Fleet that any cargo ship moving out of Ukraine will be stopped, boarded, or fired upon. We don't know. Also, that Russia's running military exercises along the coastline of Bulgaria and perhaps Romania. Does that mean that Russia retains the right to board any cargo ship leaving Romanian ports or Bulgarian ports bound for the Mediterranean? We don't know. There is the suggestion that Russia's blockading the grain coming out of the Black Sea Basin. So not only is there no grain deal, there is to be a cutoff of grain at all flowing from Ukraine and Bulgaria and Romania. And also a conversation tonight about the matter of adversaries conferring. News comes that Vladimir Putin is scheduled now to travel to Beijing in October of this year to confer with his close ally, Xi Jinping. The question is why and what is to be done? Russia is now China's savior, the energy at discount pouring into China, the food pouring into China at discount from Russia, the grain, for example, the fertilizer. All of that saves China, but what does Russia get out of it? Gregory Copley suggests that these two are adversaries, contestants, combatants. They battle each other. They're not natural allies. What is the future of the 21st century between these two nuclear-powered states in Eurasia? Thank you very much for listening. Good night.